Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, April 9th, 2016. This is episode 1277. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Corning Optical Cables. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. And by Unity, the free personal media server. With Unity, you can access, stream, and share any media stored on your computers from your mobile devices. For more information and to download Unity free, visit getunity.com/techguy. getyounity.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK. Leo is the phone number. If you want to call in, I know I said that fast. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. We have listeners all over the world thanks to the internet. You can also use Skype to call us. If you Skype out, it'll be free because it's a toll-free number. 8888-ASK. Leo, who owns your browser? Who owns what you see on the internet? I say this, this is a subject that you're not going to hear discussed very often on the radio, on television, in newspapers. It's called ad blocking. And why won't we discuss it? Well, because we don't want you to block ads. Everything I do is free. And I love this, by the way. It's ad-supported media. I don't have to sign you up for a newsletter or charge you for access to my content. I don't have to gather information about you so I can sell that information. No, it's all supported by advertisers. I think that's, I mean, there's other ways to do it, and I understand that. And I agree with, you know, anybody wants to do whatever they need to do to make their business work, that's their choice. But here in, you know, in ad-supported media, I like that because it means you don't have to have a dollar to listen. Anybody can listen. And it's ultimately democratic. I like that. Here's why I bring that up. Of course, ad blocking is on the rise big time on the internet, and there's good reason for it. I mean, there's many good reasons. There's a few reasons why people use ad blockers. I think the number one reason is because websites have become so jammed with ads now. It's so annoying. You can barely surf. And in fact, most of the bandwidth you use, and this is really true on mobile, where bandwidth is dear, most of the bandwidth you use is devoted to getting that ad stuff and the tracking stuff in and not to the content you're trying to see. And many websites are unusable on your smartphone, right? They put up a thing in front, banner in front of the content. You can't get around it, and it's just, it's unusable. And sites probably even know this and regret it, but this is what their advertising, advertisers demand, and this is what the sites need to do to stay alive, and so it just goes on and on and on. And of course, that's number one. And people just add, I can't. This is ridiculous. I can't use the site. It's ugly. It's yelling at me, and I just want to read the content. So that's number one. Number two, pure bandwidth, to save bandwidth because it's precious, and time equals bandwidth too. Because if it's a five times heavier page because of all the ad tech, that's what we call this, by the way. Not merely the ad that you see, but all the stuff behind the scenes going on. That's ad tech. If that ad tech slows the page down, which it does by a factor sometimes of two or three, then that's another problem. Okay, and that's the third reason. Fourth reason, trackers, privacy. People are concerned, and this is absolutely happening. You know, it's a weird thing. You go, you buy something on Amazon or somewhere, and then suddenly you see ads everywhere you go for that thing. It's unnerving. That's the ad tech, too. So privacy is the fourth reason. The fifth reason, which is completely a legitimate reason, is security. You know, this just happened the other day. Forbes, which is a great site, good content. And when you go to Forbes now with an ad blocker in your browser, that software that will, you know, block that stuff, it says, oh, you know, I see you're using an ad blocker, and that's how we make a living. Please turn it off before you. You can't, please. The problem is if you do and then you go to Forbes, oh, guess what? They had malware in some of their advertising that would attempt to infect your computer without your knowledge. You can't have it both ways, Forbes. You either have to be safe or let me in here with the blocker because I'm not. So now I'm not going to go back at all. Is that a good? Is that what you want? So there's five really good reasons people run ad blockers. And of course, the reason that pages like Forbes don't like that is because that's their how they make a living. You know, I mean, the networks aren't crazy about TiVo and other DVRs that let you skip. TiVo now lets you skip right to the end of the ads. You press the D button on many shows, in it, like American Idol. I wanted to see the finale. Press the D button, boom, jumps right past the ad. And, of course, that's how they pay for that very, very expensive show. There's no other way they pay for it. So I am completely sympathetic as an ad-supported medium. That's how I have been making my living for 40 years now. I understand and I'm sympathetic. But so here's the question. Who owns your browser? See, when you surf, and the reason this comes up is there's a new browser out there called Brave. Good name. It's from Brendan Eich. He was one of the founders of Mozilla, the company that gives us Firefox. He's created this browser, and it does some interesting things. It's an experiment, he says. It comes with a built-in ad blocker, so you don't even, you know, if you want to use an ad blocker on other browsers, you have to add an extension. But what's weird about it, this is actually kind of the right ad blocker, in my opinion. It doesn't block ads from the original page, the originating page. So if you go to Forbes, and Forbes was serving the ad content, but wouldn't block that. Only from what they call third parties, from ad networks coming in. But that's most ads. And then if the ad is compliant with the do not track, which most ads aren't, there's a setting in your browser, you know. It's off, but you can turn it on. It says do not track. Don't follow me around. If I buy something, don't tell everybody I bought it and then give me ads for that for the rest of my life. If it's a ad that does that tracking, that doesn't comply, they'll replace the ads on the website with new ads that comply, that don't track you. And then they take some of that revenue, but they share it with the publishers. And they say, we give you publishers better terms than they get for most ad networks. In other words, potentially publishers make more. 17 members of the Newspaper Publishers of America have called this browser blatantly illegal, a plan to steal content, and they threaten to sue. So here's the question. Who owns that browser? Brendan Eich, the creator of the browser, says browsers don't just play back recorded pixels from the publisher's site. Browsers are programs that you run that go out, get information, combine it, and display it for you. Browsers are free to ignore, rearrange, mash up, and otherwise make use of any content from any source. That's why Safari has a reader mode. You press the reader button, it cleans up the whole page. That's its right, right? Is that illegal? If a lawsuit were to be filed, if the courts were to be consulted on this, and the courts were to rule that no, a browser should display the page exactly as the publisher demands, this would be a disastrous problem. If the newspapers sued and won, they'd be forcing browsers to display the page exactly as the newspaper wanted it, would eliminate a lot of really interesting things that browsers do, would hobble the world of the future of browsers. And this is the unfortunate thing about this ad-blocking battle is that the responses to the ad blocking sometimes are worse than the original. Look at Forbes. Look at this. So who is your – are you – should you be allowed to have a program that runs on your computer? By the way, that's also under assault, your computer. Microsoft and others really think it's their computer and their software. Where will it all end? Well, I hope you'll listen to the following ads, but I won't reach my long hand out and stop you from skipping ahead or making lunch. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your calls are next. Brave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You can go too far, too. I mean, we're talking about ad blocking. In the European Union, they made a law that if a site uses cookies, it has to disclose. Now, cookies are a fundamental part of the internet. It's just it's the ability to save information about your visit in between visits. And it saves it on your browser. And it could be last page visited, password, I logged in, that kind of thing. But it can also be ad tech. It could be a variety of things. But now whenever you go to a site in the European Union, they have to put up a banner that says, this site uses cookies. Are you okay with that? Which it serves no purpose at all because it's just a waste of space. And then you say yes, and then... So, you know, you can go too far in this ad blocking as well. I don't know what the answer is. It's an interesting question. Heather Hammond is here. She's our phone ranger. She's been taking the calls, lining up fabulous visitors from the east, the west, the north, and south. Hi, HH.
Hey.
How are you today?
Awesome.
Rainy day.
A little rain.
I like that. Like that.
It's good. Makes the drive up a little longer.
I'm sorry about that.
It's all right.
What can we do here? Let's take a call, I think, would be a good...
It's a great idea.
Good idea. What do you say?
Let's go to the middle of the U.S. in Wayne, Nebraska. Shannon, who has the same name as my cool brother.
I like that name. All right. Thank you, Heather. Hello, Shannon.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. I think I must be the original male, Shannon. I'm 66, so I'm probably older than Heather's brother.
Who were you named after?
Basically, it's an Irish name, probably after the river.
Shannon River, County Cork or whatever. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, yeah. Beautiful area, actually.
Yeah.
Hey, got a problem. Marshmallow downloaded on my S6 on the April 6th.
You must be Verizon. Are you Verizon?
I am. Other people had that. Okay, that's when they did their download, right?
Yeah, that's why I know, because you actually got it earlier than most. You got Android 6.0 on your Android 5, Galaxy S6.
Yep.
How's that been for you?
Well, everything's fine except all of the podcast networks I listen to, the iHeart channels, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, time out after between 2 to 5 minutes. And I haven't been able to figure out a reason why.
Is that on both Wi-Fi and on the Verizon network, or?
It is.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, I talked to a tech rep at Verizon since they have the service. They said to clear the cache on those programs, which I did. That didn't help. I removed the programs, re-downloaded. Still doesn't help. So even Twit will time out on me after 3 to 5 minutes.
And
so
if that's important to me, because that's my podcast.
That's right. Now, you know, I can stream the video, Leo, on most the video, podcast type things, but none of the audio work other than for 2 to 5 minutes. I can seem to hold video, so that might be a clue to what's going on. I don't know.
So remember, one of the things that Marshmallow added was a new feature called Doze. Doze, which helps your battery life a lot.
Okay.
The idea being, instead of letting applications in the background willy-nilly turn on the radio to get stuff, they aggregate them and try to get them to do it all at once so that the phone isn't always on with the screen off, but in fact is dozing most of the time.
Mm.
And I would guess this is a Doze issue. And it's probably a permissions issue. So the best thing to do is to go into, I would go into the apps. You know, there's an in settings, there's an apps listing, lists all the apps.
Right, right.
And make sure that you've allowed backgrounding for those apps.
Backgrounding, okay.
Yeah, let me just, I'm going to look right now.
Yeah, we should, my landline was too noisy, so I had to call in on my cell, if you can believe it. So,
yeah, so you can't do it. That's fine. Don't, yeah, usually.
I'll make notes.
Yeah, it's almost always a mistake to do these things while we're talking anyway, right? Because then it takes forever. Application Manager. And I think that, but let me look at some podcast app. I think what it needs to do probably is probably being, I would guess, being blocked from working in the background, downloading in the background, which is what you want in these things. Permissions. Yeah, you're going to look at permissions.
Okay.
And in the permissions, you'll be able to, so you go to the app manager, you go to those specific apps and look at permissions. And see if the it's got the permissions it needs. That's just completely a guess on my part, but this is the biggest change from 5 to 6, and it's good because it means you should get much better battery life on the S6.
Sure.
I don't know if it's probably too early to tell on that, but now when you open the app and you try to download in the app, you're also getting that error message.
Well, when I open the app, I get the app right away as per normal, and it plays as normal, but then it times out, you know, after 3 to 5 minutes. I have to restart the app, and it'll play again for that 3 to 5. And like I say, it's across the board. It's not just one of the apps.
Yeah, I would guess that's it, but I'd pick one app and uninstall and reinstall it.
Right.
What do you use for podcasts? Do you use Pocket Casts or...?
No, I'm just basically, when I talk podcasts, I mean anything I can bring in on TuneIn Radio or Stitcher.
I would uninstall one of them and then reinstall it. Stitcher and TuneIn both have accounts. If you've got an account, it'll remember what you subscribed to in previous. And see, because I think what'll happen is with the new app, it'll then at some point ask for permission to download in the background. You might also look at, somebody suggesting in the chat room, the data usage section of the settings. And see if you've got a limit set on your mobile data and if applications are allowed to use mobile data.
I have unlimited on my program.
So then you should turn it on because you would want them to download when you're, even if you're on Verizon data, 4G. So that's another thing to take a look at. Let me open Stitcher here. Yeah, what you'd want is to turn on, go to the section that's data usage in the settings, look at each app and its data usage, and make sure that you have, that mobile data is allowed.
Oh, okay.
And that you've not limited it.
All right.
Because you can set a mobile data limit, and since you're unlimited, you shouldn't.
Okay.
I'm looking at things that you could take a look at. You know, if you uninstall and reinstall, the operating system will then reassign, you know, say, okay, we got to start from scratch on permissions. That might be another way to try it. Just try it with one of them and see if that helps.
All right. Just down unloading and reloading.
Yeah, I'm just giving you ideas because I don't know, I haven't seen that problem, but I use, I'm using an S7, which came with Android 6 Marshmallow. And so when I installed apps at that point, all the permissions. You might also, somebody's suggesting you go to the YouTube site and just see if audio times out on YouTube. If it does,
it
does not. Okay.
No.
So it's those apps. I'm guessing it's background downloads. But it's an interesting problem. I mean, ultimately, you might have to reset the phone, you know, and go back to factory settings. You'd stay with Marshmallow if you did that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's our home theater guru, editor-in-chief of the ABS Forum, and the host of a fabulous podcast, if I do say so myself. He is on the This Week in Tech podcast network, Twit. It's the Home Theater Geeks, because he's a home theater geek. Hello, Scotty.
I am. Hey, Leo. I am not a home theater geek.
You are all over it. Yeah, not $7,000 worth. I'm looking. I'm lusting. Yeah. But I'm not buying the new LG OLED UHD premium television set.
Well, you're probably looking at the top of the line, the flagship G6, which is mighty expensive. Yes, 65-inch, I think, is $8,000. But I'm waiting
I prefer to think of it as $7,999.
Yeah, I'm sure LG prefers to think of it that way, too. But they have another one coming out. I don't know exactly when it is. It's the B6. It's the quote-unquote entry level. It doesn't have all the design features, you know, like picture on glass and a separate soundbar input module sort of thing.
What's picture on glass?
Well, it's a design thing.
I don't care about design. Is the picture as good?
No, it's the same.
Oh, well, then good. I'll get
it's
that
exactly
one.
Exactly.
How much is
same.
That one?
Well, I don't know. I haven't heard the price on that one yet, but I'm sure it's a lot less.
$6,999.
No, I think it's probably going to be less than that. I don't know, but that's the one I'm most interested in because
I don't care
about design.
No, I don't either. I just want a good picture.
Exactly.
And I'm not going to use a sound bar, so I don't care about that.
Right, exactly.
So it's the same panel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Essentially. I don't know if there are any technical differences. I think not. I mean, LG has said on more than one occasion, picture quality is the same throughout the entire line.
Nice.
What changes is the design.
Who cares?
So I don't care about that. So, yeah, I'll spend less money.
And partly, this is because I spent an ungodly amount of money on one of the early OLED TVs.
You were a very early
adopter.
And it's
still good. There's nothing wrong with it. Anything wrong with the other big screen I have, which is a Panasonic Viera Plasma.
Mm-hmm.
They both look great.
Great picture, yeah. Of course, you can't see, Ultra HD, nor can you see high dynamic range on
That's
either
what
of them,
I'm so. Most interested in is high dynamic range.
Yes, as you should be,
yeah.
as I am.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. That is really stunning.
Somebody said the 55-inch C6 is $3,000.
Ah, well, the C6 is the only – this is interesting, too. LG used to be really big on curved screens.
Yeah.
Samsung still is,
yeah.
But the new line of OLEDs, only the C6 out of four lines, only the C6 is curved.
C stands
Everything
for curved.
Everything else is flat.
I don't care about
exactly.
curved. Curved does nothing for me.
Right, right.
So there's the B6. But that's a good sign because if the curved, that would be still more expensive, right?
Yeah.
Because of the curve.
Well, I don't know.
No.
To tell you the truth, it probably will be. I mean, there's the B6, the C6, the E6, and the G6.
Yeah.
And the G6 is the flagship. It's flat. E6 is flat. C6 is curved. B6 is flat. So mostly flat, which I'm really happy about.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
You know,
a lot of times I think they're just trying to get you somehow to buy it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's with gimmicks. You know, it's just gimmicks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
and unfortunately, because of that, people are thinking, oh, HDR, high dynamic range, is another gimmick like 3D or whatever. But I'm telling you, it's not. It's really good. That is not a gimmick. That is a seriously improved picture.
Good.
So by all means, go, you know, find an HDR set if you can. I posted a list on AVS Forum of all the 2015 and 2016 HDR-capable TVs or displays. I also included projectors. There aren't very many, but there are a few that have HDR capability. And that, I really encourage people to go in that direction if they can when they're buying a new TV because that's the future.
You convinced me that it does look better. I'm not so sure about 4K, whether I care about 4K. But
you know, that's an interesting question. At NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters Convention, which starts a week after next, I'm going, of course, and I'll be interviewing a bunch
of
people.
We'll be there, too. Yeah.
You'll be there, too. So looking forward to seeing you there in Vegas.
Yeah.
And one of the things I'm going to be covering is a demonstration of ATSC 3.0, which is the over-the-air broadcast system for 4K. Or UHD. But what's interesting about it is they're using a camera from Grass Valley that isn't UHD, it's 1080p, but it does convey high dynamic range. So 1080p with high dynamic range, I think, is a beautiful combination. And that's what they're going to be showing. They're going to actually broadcast a signal from this particular camera over. They're going to send it to a local TV station. They're going to broadcast it from Black Mountain or whatever the transmitting area is in Vegas and pick it up back at the convention center.
Remind me to go over there and look at that.
Yeah. I think this is really, really cool. So I'm going to be covering that. I'm going to be doing my interviews all throughout Tuesday, and that'll be my podcast for that Thursday. Then it'll get put together as
yes,
my podcast.
The Home Theater Geeks podcast from NAB. Mm-hmm. Should be fun. And if you're going to NAB, we'll be I'll be there in the Live View booth. They're hosting our broadcast Monday. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going home, but we'll continue. Others will continue.
I'll be in the Live View booth on Tuesday.
Tuesday, okay. So you
yeah,
can,
but
come
I'm,
say
I'll be there on Monday as well. So I'll probably drop
so
by.
So come
and
get
hi.
Me, and we'll go for a walk. I love going. If you ever get a chance to go for a walk with Scott Wilkinson at one of these conferences where there are a lot of new TVs, do it's so fun. Yeah.
Well, it's so I have fun. Always have a great time.
Now NAB. Is for broadcasters. Will they still have all the consumer stuff there? Or
no. Well, they have a little bit, I think, but not very much. You're right. It's an entirely professional show. But the reason that I'm so excited about going, being that I mostly cover the consumer end of things, is I like to see what the professionals are doing, what equipment they're using, what kinds of things they're thinking about in terms of creating the content and then transmitting or distributing the content in – because I want to see how all of that affects the consumer experience.
Right.
So I'm not really going to be looking too much at workflows and connections within
that?
The studio.
That's their issue.
That's their issue.
Yeah.
But how are they dealing with HDR, high dynamic range? How are they encoding that? And how does that affect what we see as consumers at home and in the commercial cinema, too? There's some of that. Christie is there with their laser projectors, so I'm going to check out those. And
don't get excited, folks. Those are like start at $50,000, right?
Oh, yeah, at least.
Oh, at least.
Yeah, we're really talking six figures.
Direct there. View, though, to me is still better. It's not as big. I understand. You can with a projector, you can get 100, 200
huge.
Screen.
Yeah.
But I like direct view. And you can get, 70 inches direct view is pretty good. I mean, I can't
pretty
believe
good.
We're buying TVs that are 70 inches. And well, how much is that Vizio P series?
The Vizio P series 75-inch TV is $3,800.
Maybe I should just get that. Call it a day. Here's the problem. If Leo is saying, I don't want to buy a new TV, that must be kind of because I'm like the crazy guy who buys a new TV every couple of years. I'm not even incented at this point. I just feel like that my TVs look pretty good. I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, the high dynamic range is what's going to really take it to the next level. And boy, when you see that in your home with the content is coming, and there is plenty of it available now, and lots more in the days ahead.
Scott Wilkinson, you'll find him at the incredible AVS Forum, avsforum.com, and of course his Home Theater Geek podcast is at Twit, TWIT. It stands for This Week in Tech. Twit.tv/htg. Thank you, Scotty. We'll see you next week.
You betcha.
More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. I'm all in on the VR now, man. I'm loving the VR. Will there be any VR at the NAB?
Tons.
Oh, good.
Tons.
Oh, good.
Tons. I always have a little trouble thinking about VR. I think it's great for games, but for movies, I'm looking forward to hearing what movie makers have to say about how are they going to make a movie in VR when you can look all around and not necessarily pay any attention to the story they're trying to tell you in a movie.
Yeah.
Right? A movie is a story, right? And
that's
so
why
the
I'm
story's
not into the gimmicks.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I'm here for the show, the story.
It's story.
Although I want to see this. What is that Crazy Henry movie where it's your...
Yeah, Henry. Yeah.
Your first person. We almost went to see that the other day. Instead, I saw half of 10 Cloverfield Lane. Now I don't know what's going to happen. I had to leave.
Oh, man.
So I guess I'll rent it.
Speaking of next week, though, I said, you said, see you next week, and actually, I won't be here next week.
Because
I'll be at NAB.
Oh,
There's a conference going on before the actual show starts a week from Monday.
Yeah.
But there's a conference going on the previous weekend called the Future of Cinema Conference.
Oh, fun.
And that's going to be really fun. We're going to see, for example, apparently we're going to see a clip from Ang Lee's latest movie. He's going to be the keynote speaker at that conference. And he made a movie, oh gosh, I can't remember the name of it. Somebody in the chat room can help me, I'm sure. And it's we're gonna see it in high dynamic range, 4K resolution at a frame rate of 120 frames per second.
Ooh.
So this is gonna be really, really interesting.
Nice.
And so anyway, that's Friday and Saturday and Sunday. Sorry, I'm leaving Friday. Gonna go to this conference Saturday and Sunday, so I will not, in fact, be here next week.
Okay.
For the show. Just so you know. It's not Life of Pi, Scooter X. It's something brand new. I can't think of the name of it. Let me see if I can find it here real quick, because it's getting kind of some publicity, but I have to first find it. Ang Lee. Why is my computer behaving slowly? Let's see. What is his latest movie that's coming out? Well, I can't find it off the top of my computer here, but I know it's something, and they're going to show this new high frame rate and so on and so forth. I'm also going to see lots of other HDR. HDR is going to be one of the main themes of NAB. So I'm looking forward to that tremendously.
Awesome.
Yes, that's it. Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. Scooter X, thank you very much.
I don't know why that's you can't exactly remember that.
Yeah, really?
Why, that's obvious.
That's a long name. So, yeah, no wonder I couldn't remember it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're going to show clips of that in high dynamic range, 4K, 120 frames per second. And so I'm really looking forward to that. I am not one of these people who says, oh, if it's more than 24 frames per second on a movie, can't be done. It's not good. I disagree with that.
Did you watch that side-by-side movie about the move to digital video film from...
No, I haven't yet, but I've got it.
It's awesome. 99 cents. All right. Going to stick around for the top?
Happy to.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask... Leo. Lewis in Hollywood. Hey, Lewis.
Mr. President.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Fine. Before my tech question, I understand that the home office of the Twit Network will be relocating soon.
We're moving to Sioux City, Iowa. I'm joking. We're going to be moving like a mile away. Not till August.
I was wondering what's going to happen to my brick house brick, which I haven't had a chance to drop by and see.
You better hurry. We built a beautiful studio. I'm very about 5 years ago. Gorgeous place, and we did it with your help and the help of 1,800 other folks who bought bricks. You know, as like ballparks do this too. They do fundraisers. We sold bricks, and the bricks are on the wall. The bricks are mortared on the wall. The bricks are mortared securely on the wall because we live in earthquake country. Well, I've asked the contractor, and he said, well, we could probably take them off, but we're going to break a few. I said, well, it's a few. He said, well, I don't know, 20%? So I don't know exactly what's going to happen with the bricks. We haven't decided yet. But if you want to see your brick intact, you want a guaranteed view of it intact, you might want to come before August.
Well, maybe you could do a video recording.
I think we were going to take a high-res picture. I think we'll certainly do that, high-res pictures of them all, and maybe make some vinyl wallpaper or something, just in case.
Yeah.
We're going to try to pry them off, but apparently that's a challenging thing to do, the way they were put on. So I apologize, but we got our 5 years out of the place. You know, they think they're turning it into a brewery. But, of course, they got to get permission. Yeah, Heather goes, they got to get permission from the city and stuff, so we'll see what happens. But meanwhile, they're kicking us out for the where I'm sitting is going to be a giant vat of malt. but that's all right. We found a very nice place, half the rent, very comfortable, and the studios will move intact. And so you won't from the listener's point of view, I'd be completely indistinguishable. And actually, from our staff's point of view, there's some major improvements, including a proximity to another brewery. Petaluma has a few breweries for some reason. We've become the golden Colorado of the West.
Leo, recently I started receiving mail from a company whose initials are LL, which...
Not Leo Laporte?
No. Good. For a monthly fee, they offer legal and other services.
Oh, them.
Storing my identity should it be stolen.
Ah.
And the monthly fee is either $10, $20, or $30 a month, depending on the amount of service I choose.
Yeah.
Are they worth it?
Well, I have to tell you, they're a sponsor, as you know. Disclaimer there. And all I can say is I've been a LifeLock subscriber for more than 10 years. I got it initially because of my kids. Because identity theft is not discriminate on age. And the worst thing would be for somebody to have identity theft as a kid. Because that would, you know, then your credit is a problem for a long time to come. Identity theft is just nasty no matter what. The question really is, how much help can a company give you to protect you? And this is my opinion, this has nothing to do with the advertisers. In fact, they won't let me say this on the ads because they have been sued by many states' attorney general. In my opinion, because the credit reporting agencies don't like them. You know, the big three, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian. Most of the money they make, well, they make money in two ways. One, charging you for a credit report. You know that one freecreditreport.com that isn't free?
Yeah.
That's run by Experian. And then the other way they make money is by selling your information to companies that give you those free credit card offers. Where do those, you get in the mail every day, the ones that would be perfect for stealing for identity theft, where does that information come from? TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. So they really hate what LifeLock used to do. LifeLock used to go and put a fraud alert on your account automatically and keep it up to date. And it was very effective. They sued. And they went after him, I think, in a kind of nefarious way. They got state's attorneys general to go after them for claims in their ads. And so now they're very constrained. This is kind of weird. I keep saying to them, guys, you've got to tell people what you do because nobody knows. And they say, we can't, which I feel is really unfortunate.
Sounds almost like restraint of trade.
It feels like it. This is my opinion, although if you do some searches, for credit reporting agencies and LifeLock, you'll find, if you read into it, I think you'll come to the opinion I've come to, that this was really kind of a vendetta on the part of the credit unions, who basically, they didn't shut them down. What LifeLock then did, which was very smart, they bought a company that does the back-end analytics for credit card companies. You know, when you get a call from your credit card company saying, we're worried there's some fraud because your credit card was just used to purchase two tanks of gas at the same gas station at the same time. That information doesn't come from the credit card companies. It comes from a third party they contract with that does this data analytics, very high-end, I think, big data analysis, and says, look, these are flagged. LifeLock owns that company. So they actually have, I think, in my opinion, they have really good information about what's going on. Now, they're required in the ads to say things like, and again, this is me talking, not LifeLock. I don't want to get them in trouble. They say things in their ads like, no company can protect you against all identity theft and not all transactions can be monitored. Well, that's obvious. If I pay the newspaper guy a buck, that transaction is not monitored. Duh. Why? They were forced to do that by these lawsuits and consent decrees. They do monitor. They do a very good job of monitoring, in my opinion, better than if you go to Equifax or TransUnion or Experian, you're only getting a part of the picture. So you're getting that, and then they have, and then what they're allowed to sell and what the ads mostly sell is this, we'll fix it if you get in trouble. That, to me, is secondary. That's what they have to advertise because it's the only thing they're really allowed to advertise. Is this help you fix it? But and certainly that's a part of it. But really, once you don't want to have it happen in the first place. So do you need LifeLock? I don't know. You have to decide that. It is expensive, I admit. It's not cheap. I've been paying for it for 10 years, and I don't plan to discontinue it at any time. And by the way, never had a problem. And that's another problem that makes it hard to sell their product. Their product is working best when there are no problems.
And if anyone was going to have a problem, it'd be you because your life is...
Well, that's one of the reasons. And so this is why, if you were in public and you were talking about things like security and credit card fraud, I think you would have to go a step beyond what a normal person would do.
Yeah.
What should you do as a normal person? You can do everything LifeLock does yourself. It's really up to you whether you want to pay for it or not. You can go and make sure you check your credit reports quarterly. And check them from all three, by the way, not any individual one. There are a number of services. My bank, for instance, gives me my FICO score and a free credit report. I'm at USAA. So I can check that information. There are ways to do that. If you have any excuse to put a fraud alert on your accounts, do. Those are challenging because it means that when you want to get a credit card or a car loan, you have to take extra steps. But I think that that's not a bad thing. And you know who I would refer you to? Dave Ramsey has an excellent article on fraud alerts and what to do with fraud alerts. And I trust him. Of course, he's a you know, like me, a syndicated radio host. Unlike me, he covers money. And I would check his site. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. And he talks about these fraud alerts and how effective they are. They're a pain for you a little bit. I think it's worth it. And by the way, it's getting worse. You know, we keep seeing these, the Office of Personnel Management, the IRS, Target, all these breaches. Hackers just released personal information about 60% of Turkish citizens because they got into a Turkish government database, compromised. More than half of all the citizens of Turkey were compromised. This is getting worse and worse.
Almost worth it to just have bad credit from the beginning to do anything with your identity.
Well, the easiest thing to do would be only use cash.
Yeah.
That would be the easiest thing to do and not have credit cards. There are other solutions. There's lots of solutions. We talk about them all the time. One-time use credit card number is a great idea.
I heard you talk about that.
Yeah. There's lots of things you can do. Check your bank to see what they have. Banks are increasingly aware of this problem. They get hit by it as badly as you do. There's lots of solutions to this, but you have to do something, and I'm lazy. So I thought, hey, it's worth the whatever it is I pay, $20 or $30 a month to have that protection, and particularly for not just for me but for my kids. That's why I did it. And as you say, as a public figure, I think I'm more vulnerable. Knock on wood, I've not been hacked, I shouldn't say this out loud. I've not had any problems, but man, I feel like I'm putting myself on the line. And any celebrity, anybody in the security business, this is, you know, we're prime targets. So you have to make your decision. They're an advertiser. Disclaimer: what I've told you is my personal opinion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hey, everybody. Here I is. I've been chatting with a bunch of people here in the chat room. Let's see. Where's the list of HDR TVs? I just posted that in the chat room, so anybody who wants to check that out can go do that. I have not yet added the P-Series. I just realized I have to add that in. Let's see. Oh, in fact, speaking of the P-Series, user 4008 is asking Vizio P 55 or 65, IPS or VA? This is a pretty good question. The P series is four sizes, 50, 55, 65, and 75 inches. All three of those sizes, 50, 65, and 75, are what are called VA panels, vertically aligned, which typically gives you better blacks, but worse off-axis performance. The 55 is the only one with what's called an IPS panel, in-plane switching, which gives you better off-axis performance, but not quite as good blacks. Now, is that really important with a full array local dimming set such as the P-Series? I'm not sure. I look forward to checking into that. But the answer to the question is, well, do you need to have a lot of people off-axis often? You know, so a big party, big viewing party for the Super Bowl or Oscars or whatever, then you might often, if you often have a lot of people pretty far off axis, then an IPS panel is going to be better. But with the P-Series, it only comes in one size, 55. If, on the other hand, you're mostly right in front of the TV and there aren't a lot of people off to the side, VA panels are generally preferred. And in that case, you'd want the 50 or the 65 or the 75. Now, the another thing to keep in mind is that the 50-inch, it has a 60 hertz panel. So the panel refreshes 60 times a second. All the other ones, all the larger ones, have 120 hertz refresh rate. Which allows for the possibility of frame interpolation, which many people don't like, but it does sharpen up motion. There's better backlight scanning, so that can sharpen up motion as well. So there are many things to consider here. Now, Battlecam had alerted me to something that last week or 2 weeks ago, something happening in the Ultra HD TV world that's kind of weird. And that is 4K TVs, as I'm sure you know, you probably know, and if you don't, I'll tell you, each pixel in a TV is composed of a red, green, and blue subpixel. So each individual pixel has a red element, a green element, and a blue element, and those can be varied different brightnesses to produce different colors. LG OLEDs, as I think I mentioned during the show, has an extra white subpixel with each pixel. And so that lets it be brighter. So that has some advantages. But now there are some 4K LCD TVs with an RGBW white pixel structure. But the white subpixel is shared between adjacent pixels. And so what that ends up with is it actually lowers the resolution of what you see on the screen. Instead of 3840 pixels across, it's only 2880. Now you might wonder, well, does that make any difference? And the answer is, in most cases, probably not. But if you put up test patterns or certain kinds of content, it will make a big difference. And so the question then is, well, which TVs have this and which don't? And I've just started researching this, but I intend to do a lot more coverage of it because I think it's a really important topic. My colleague Mark Henninger just went to Samsung last week to talk about this exact thing. And he calls me up and he goes, is this something we need to be concerned about? And I said, yes, this is something we need to be concerned about. So study it, learn all you can about it. And in fact, he now has a TV with this RGBW pixel structure, not the LG kind, but this other weird kind, and then another one with RGB, regular old RGB. And he's going to set them up side by side, feed them the same signal, and see what happens. It's going to be very interesting. So look for that on AVS Forum for sure. User 4008 says the space is big enough for either a 55 or a 65. Getting back to that Vizio P series question, planning on getting an articulating wall mount. So viewing angle shouldn't be too much of an issue. Black level, then how about black levels? Well, the VA panel has intrinsically better black levels. So I would get the 65 in that case. Always better to get a bigger screen than a smaller screen, in my opinion as well. So let's see, who else has got something? Ah, good question, Beatmaster. After 3D disappears on TVs, which it's quickly doing, will theaters keep doing it, or are there signs of its demise there as well? And when they keep doing it, could HDR give us a better version of it? Great questions, Beatmaster. I think that it's going to continue in theaters. I don't see any sign of it letting up in theaters. It's just going to be there. And interestingly, a lot of movies that come out in 3D in the theaters do not come out in 3D anymore on Blu-ray. So it is disappearing in the home, but it's still in the theaters, and I don't see any sign of it not being. I think it's going to stay there quite some time. And could HDR give a better version of it? That's a pretty good question. In my view, HDR in 2D looks quite dimensional, because of the fact that you have this greater contrast. So I think, in my opinion, 3D is not as important in HDR. And I'm really happy that AMC theaters, which are the ones that now have HDR in certain rooms, 15 of them at last count in the U.S., 4 in Europe, They don't do 3D in the HDR, in the Dolby Cinema room. They do it in the IMAX theater, and they do it in other theaters in the complex, in the multiplex, but they don't do it in the Dolby Cinema, the AMC Dolby Cinema at Prime locations. And I'm glad, because I prefer HDR without it, plus the fact that the AMC theaters use the Dolby Cinema projectors, which use these spectrum separation glasses, and they cause weird reflections with my glasses and cause weird milky halos. So that's why I don't want it.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. Hey, and we have a lot of listeners all around the world on the internet, on the interwebs. Just use Skype. Walter Huntington, West Virginia is next. Hi, Walter. Hello, Walter. Did I push the button? I didn't. Now you're on. Hi, Walter.
Okay, hi. I've got a Windows 10 computer, and the hard drive consists of 284 gigabytes in the apps and games portion.
Wow.
But I looked at the apps and the games, and they only add up to about 4.5 gigabytes. So
what?
I don't, I'm new at this, but that's what I...
Are you? Is it say you're running out of room? How much is the total drive?
570 kilobytes. Gigabytes.
Okay. So you've used half of your capacity on the programs and games, but it's only 4 gigs. How do you know it's 4 gigs? You did the...
I got into the storage and clicked on the main, the horizontal bar graph, and I looked at the apps and games portion of it. You know, it's the green colored, and it tells me it's 284 gigabytes. And then when you click on it, it lists the apps, which I believe are apps such as Google Chrome or iTunes, but it doesn't list the games. So I looked for games separately, and I only got about 45 kilobytes. Now, maybe I'm not doing it right, but...
My suspicion is there's issues about what you're seeing that you're not understanding. But here's what I would recommend. There's a great program called, and it's free, called WinDirStat, WINDIRSTAT.
Okay.
It's free from winderstat.info.
Okay.
And it gives you a graph. This is the best way to see how much space is used on your hard drive. It gives you a pretty graphic.
Okay.
With all of the what's nice is it gives you a graphic that shows you all the different kinds of content in colored blobs and sorted by the amount consumed.
Okay.
So I think you'll see there more clearly what's free, what's used, and what's available. It's conceivable that I'm not sure where the 4 gig figure that you're seeing is coming from or the 286 gig figure is coming from. That's a pretty big disparity. It's not unusual, for instance, for there to be some disparity. There's cached stuff, saved game info. I think it's just what you're looking at is probably not exactly clear. So try this and see. By the way, I want to correct myself. It was not Dave Ramsey. It was Clark Howard. I apologize. Earlier we were talking about credit reports. And thank you to D. Claire in the chat room for giving me the right link, which we will put in the show notes at techguylabs.com. It wasn't Dave. Dave Ramsey does have some good stuff on identity fraud and so forth. But ClarkHoward.com. Clark, another show host, he talks about money, and he has some really good information. So I apologize, gave you the wrong host, but they're both good. Love them both. What the heck, you know? As long as they don't confuse me with somebody else, I don't mind. 8888-ASK-LEO. So, Walter, I hope that helps. And this is a program everybody should have. It's really fabulous. They user 8944 in our chat room is suggesting that you run it as the admin in Windows. So if you're in on a limited user account or a standard user account, just right-click the icon once you install it and say run as admin. You'll have to give it the administrator password, and that way you'll see everything. You want to make sure you see everything. So there you go. Anthony, Westminster, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Leo. Just wondering, because I plan on building my dream computer, and I'm reading a lot of conflicting reports about whether or not I should buy a separate cooler for the CPU, like, you know, a separate fan, like a third-party fan, or just use the stock CPU that the that it comes with when you buy, like, the package, when you buy the CPU package.
The heat is a big issue, especially when you build your own computer. If you're going to do things like gaming, I presume that's why you're building it, right?
Yes. Yeah. But also, I'm going to be doing, like, video editing and stuff like that. So it's going to be, like, a jack-of-all-trades computer, you know. So I'm going to get a high-end graphics card, a high-end processor, lots of RAM, and, like, two, three different types of... I've been looking at two, three different types of cooling systems, the one that I should go water or just fans and stuff like that. So.
I'll tell you what I got. I just built a computer because we had to for the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive, these new virtual reality headsets. They require a computer that I have a number of Windows computers. I'm looking at Microsoft Surface Book right now. That's not powerful enough. So we needed to build a gaming machine. You can buy them, too. And we did put a water cooler on it. Now, the days of liquid cooling in the old days, you had to worry about leaks. It was all evaporation. It was just a pain. But nowadays, you can go out and buy a sealed unit. And this is what we did. And I did this on the recommendation. I'm going to point you to a website you need to know about. A recommendation of my personal expert, Ryan Shrout. And it's just for the CPU. It's a sealed system. You don't ever have to add water. It's very straightforward. The case we bought, the motherboard we bought, all support liquid cooling. And if you're going to do one of two things, either drive your machine hard with games or you're going to overclock, then you really need to make sure that that processor stays cool. And I'm very impressed. It also reduces the noise because you don't have to have big whooshing jet engine fans anymore. And so this machine runs a little bit quieter. So the information I got this from, and I would point you to this site, is PC Perspective, PCPER.com. And they have something called the Hardware Leaderboard. And they describe what to do to build a modest machine all the way up to a dream machine. They have four different builds. Highly recommend. It's what we used. And he did a great job, and we built a beautiful machine. Now, let me say this. You're still better off going to a company and just buying a machine because then they warranty it. There's one number to call if it's not working. When you build your own, it's a lot of fun. You probably won't save money. And if something goes wrong, guess who's the support guy? You. Not me. You. Leo Laporte. Optical cables by Corning.com. Optical cables by Corning.com. It's time to talk about my Corning cables. You wouldn't think cables would be that interesting, but you, my friend, would be wrong. These optical cables from Corning are amazing. I remember when we first got fiber optic cables in the brick house, we got one of those big storage area network drives and the orange fiber optic cables. And the guy said, whatever you do, do not tie them in knots. Do not bend them. And under no circumstances should you step on them. I said, "What do you mean? I shouldn't do this? I shouldn't tie it in a knot? I shouldn't just like jam them, crimp them, and jam them into these little holes here? Like, no, gosh, don't do that because it's glass. It'll break the glass." Well, see, these guys at Corning, what do? They do glass, right? They know glass. They have made fiber optic cables that work in the most difficult situations. I just tied it in a knot, for instance, and I'm crimping these cables, and I'm going to show you, it takes a bending, but it keeps on sending. These are cables. Now, you may say, well, what am I going to, I don't have a sand. Oh, no, wait a minute. These are Thunderbolt cables. These are USB 3.0 cables. These are the cables you use all the time, and because they use fiber, they use glass. Here, I'll show you. This is a laser. See, it's blinking red. All right, and I'm just going to put this little attach. This is, they cut off the end of this so I could stick it in the laser. Now you would think with a knot in it and with a crimp in it, it wouldn't still send. Wait a minute, It's still sending data. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to do it some more. I'm going to step on this. I'm going to hurt it. It's fun. I get all my aggression out on this. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com. You can learn all about these amazing new cables using new glass technologies from Corning. They're 50% thinner. They're 80% lighter than their traditional copper cables. That means you can go 60 meters with your Thunderbolt cable. That's 200 feet. 165 feet with your USB 3 cables. That means you can take that noisy drive and put it, which is what I do, and put it under the desk or put it down the hall or put it in a closet. These are amazing. Corning optical cables, longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. If you go to opticalcablesbycorning.com, you can learn more. And then run out. And, you know, I had some, but I think they're all gone. People have been taking my cables. they don't know about the kit yet. Opticalcablesbycorning.com. Okay, maybe I took a couple home too. They're the greatest. I'm telling you, this is the cable you want. Opticalcablesbycorning.com. And we thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy. They know that you people appreciate good engineering. And they are happy to show you this stuff. USB 3.0 optical and Thunderbolt optical cables. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Steve in Hermosa Beach, California. You're next. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo, longtime listener, and sure do appreciate the advice.
Well, thank you.
Listen, two things I'd like to talk about if we could. One should be quick. It's new laptop time, and I've been looking at the Lenovo P50.
Nice.
I heard you a couple weeks ago say you're definitely moving away from Lenovo. So,
you know, I shouldn't be too harsh on them. They did a couple of things, but I think they realized their error. They put spyware on their machines.
Right. Is that gone?
Yes.
Okay.
And it compromised their user security. I mean, spyware is one thing, but to compromise your security is another. And this was a dumb thing to do. They apologized. They withdrew it. I think that they've learned their lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, they make really good laptops. I love their ThinkPads.
I've had two Lenovos. One good, one, yeah, I'd rather throw it out the window.
Yeah.
And I want to avoid that. So I've been looking at the P50. It's got the new Xeon processor. And you can use dual PCI drives with a third SSD drive for data. Now,
it's kind of a crazy laptop, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But for my normal
data, it weighs 6 pounds. You should be, I mean, it's a we kind of call these desktop replacements.
Right. The good one that worked out was the T510, and I'm used to hauling it and its battery around.
You don't mind that. That's fine, yeah.
Well, what I want, I'm doing a lot with video. So
okay.
I'd like to have it on one machine, but yeah, I do a lot of 4K video, and I'm about to move into 4K raw video.
You're editing?
Yeah, I'm flying drones, so I've edited.
Nice.
To put up.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's very challenging, and a laptop, of course, is always going to struggle a little bit with these high, bandwidth data. But if any laptop could handle it, it would be this. I think this is a great choice. I mean, most of the time, people want light and thin, and they compromise performance in order to get that better battery life, that kind of thing.
Right.
This machine is a workhorse, a desktop replacement. I mean, it has. Well, the fact that you could run three drives tells you something, right?
Well, and you can run 64 gigs of memory.
Yeah, it's perfect for what you just described. It also supports Thunderbolt and Type-C, which is, I think, going to be very important because external drives are going to be important to you, I think, with all that storage.
Right.
This is a nice – now, I'm looking at a review that says they got 8.5 hours of battery life, which is really remarkable – for something like this, and longer than almost anything else on the market. So,
yeah,
I would say this, and the price is right too. It's not super expensive. So, I would say for what you just described, this is a very good choice.
Very good. Good. Then can I move on to the second one?
Yeah.
I took your advice and I bought the Tiny Hardware Firewall, and I'm finding it really difficult to work with on the road. I emailed the company, and they will not offer a refund. I've had a software firewall before. I won't. VPN.
Yeah, this is a VPN. What are you having trouble with?
I can't configure it for the Wi-Fi, and they said, "Yeah, I just put a trouble ticket in. I haven't heard back from them." And
yeah, they're not. I mean, it's a small company. Although they've been in business for, I think, 20 years.
Yeah. I'm just concerned.
I have never had any trouble joining Wi-Fi networks. So. Remember, it doesn't remember the Wi-Fi network usually. So you have to configure it every time you get to a coffee shop or somewhere else. The first thing you do is you'll run the tiny, you know, you plug in the tiny hardware firewall. My only beef with it at all is that the power connector is a USB, micro USB, and it falls out a lot.
Yeah, all the time.
So you just have to put it somewhere where it ain't going to fall out. Yeah. And then after that, you got to wait because it takes a while to boot up. This is not super fast hardware. You got to give it a few minutes, literally, to get into a final boot state. And I think probably what you're experiencing, some have complained about, which is it appears to be ready sooner than it is. So you can start setting it up, and then it's going to do another boot, and you're going to lose it. So my suggestion is be a little more patient. I bring a battery with it. Instead of connecting it to the computer, I power it by a battery. And I would say, you know, you get to the coffee shop before you open your computer. Before you order your coffee, before you do anything else, you power it up and you give it 5 minutes. I mean, I'm not kidding. You give it enough time. Don't be fooled by the light. See, I just plugged it in. It's got a green light. That's not true. It's got to boot twice. It's going to go through the boots process twice before it's ready. And this is where I bet you're running into problems. The first time it appears to be ready, you can log into it. And then you'll put in the settings, and it'll reboot, and it will forget everything you've done. So patience. Give it 5 minutes. I use this in hotels all the time. I'll get to the hotel, check in, go up to the room, plug this in, and then put it somewhere and let it sit. You know, unpack, take off my shoes. Then I sit down with a laptop and configure it for the Wi-Fi. And then I only use this for my phone, my laptop, my tablet. It will support up to 5 different devices. And I will only use this as the access point, not the hotel's Wi-Fi. And I've done this now many times, and it's worked fine. So it could be you have a bad unit, but the one thing I would caution you on this tiny hardware firewall is be patient. It's dumb. It's like this is a little tiny Marvell chip in here. It's not like a computer.
Okay.
But I do feel like now, and I don't have to give you the other caveat because you've used a VPN, a virtual private network, before. You understand that adds overhead, and it means your surfing is going to be slower than if you were connected directly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If you can use it in Ethernet mode, that will be better, both more secure and faster configuration. But if you can't, just be patient. And it could be you have a bad unit, in which case, yeah, it's going to be a support issue, and you know, it's only $90. It's and you get a year of firewall service, which is good with or without the hardware. So I feel like it's a pretty good deal. I'm sorry that you're having bad support. I'm not surprised though. Did you contact the Wi-Fi consulting folks in D.C.?
Yeah, I just emailed whoever shipped it to me and got kind of a rude reply. I mean, you know, I can configure it. It's just, you know, week after week, new hotel. It's just kind of a pain.
Well, I don't blame you for that. But a week after week, new hotel is a pain, too.
Nah, that's life.
Are you a traveling salesman? You selling the Fuller brushes?
Oh, can't really say.
Ah, all right.
Supporting government clients.
How nice.
Yeah.
Well, then you have a very good reason to be using a security device like this.
Absolutely, and I want to protect my data. I've used a software one before, ProXPN or something.
ProXPN's great. I mean, look, I use this, and it's worked fine for me. I love the idea that one device can handle up to 5 units in the hotel room. You may have a bad unit, but I've been very happy with it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me show you. So I've given enough time, I think, you know, by the way, this is also confusing. That's solid red. That what you would think, oh, well, that's something wrong with that. No, that's that's what it's supposed to do. Our traveling man is here. He's home. I recognize the kitchen. Johnny
no,
Jett.
I'm not home.
You're not?
I'm in Natalie's home.
Oh, you're in Toronto.
I am.
Nice.
That's
Johnny Jett.
My flannel. It's
a little chilly?
It's -1 Celsius.
What? So, no. Yeah. It can't be. Yeah. It's April. Oh,
it's
man.
It's supposed to snow tomorrow.
Yeah, the and East Coast is tomorrow. Going through a weird, jeez, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So Johnny Jett is our travel guru. He has a website, johnnyjett.com. And because he is a millennial, he's actually not a millennial. He just looks like a millennial.
I'm not a millennial, but thank you.
He's very up on the stuff, you know, the kids. He knows the Snapchat and the Instagram and the Twitter and using websites and technology to travel better. And that's what he joins us for every week. How technology can make our travel experience better. What do you got for us this week?
So actually, one of your readers sent me an email, and they told me to talk about this one subject, which actually is my tip for Monday, and it was already planned.
Oh.
But so the airlines, you know, Delta, American, and United have been charging travelers much more than they should for multi-city trips. So let's say you're flying, you know, for example, the AP just wrote a story, New Orleans, Dallas to L.A., So instead of doing like one ticket from New Orleans to LA and back, you're stopping in Dallas for a night or whatever. You know, that ticket priced out at $289 using their multi-city function. But if you price them out on a one-way ticket, each leg one way, you will save up to $116. So the airlines, they're actually one of the representatives is now looking into it because it's, you know, it should be illegal the way they're pricing it out. But for consumers, my advice is instead of booking multi-city tickets, you know, at one shot, price them out at one ways first. Does that make sense?
So you'd buy two one-way tickets?
Exactly. And that's usually how I book my tickets anyway. So, you know, I'm in Toronto right now. And
you only buy one leg at a time. You don't buy it around.
Exactly.
I always thought it was cheaper to buy round trip.
In certain cities, especially in Europe, on the big carriers, not on the low fare carriers, but like Alitalia or France, it's usually cheaper to buy a round trip, even if you're not using the return leg.
But really? Wow.
That's a whole other story.
So but really, the message is try a different couple of different ways to
exactly.
see which is the most affordable.
So I always, you know, I usually look at multi-cities and then I'll price it out, but then I'll also do one-way tickets. And, you know, a website great for that is Google Flights. So they make it real easy. On my website, you can't even do multi-city.
Google bought the company, ITA, that is the back end for most of these travel agents.
For sure. They spent over $1 billion. I used to see these guys at the trade shows before Google bought them, and I used to meet with them. You know, these guys are just rolling in the money now. But their software is great, especially for you know, multi-city trips. But again, you now want to price it out one ways.
All right.
Because it will save you money.
Okay.
And actually, your reader who sent me this thing said he bought three separate one ways and he saved over $1,300. I have no idea where he was going, but it had to be internationally. But that's the kind of money you can save.
Wow. That's really, that's kind of counterintuitive.
So for sure.
I got a San Francisco to Paris round trip, $1,202. But if I did one way...
No, I'm not talking about just a simple round-trip ticket. I'm saying if you're flying San Francisco
multi-city.
To Paris, and then you wanted to go
multi-city.
To Rome, and then back to San Francisco.
Got it. Now I'm going to add another one. I get it. So multi-city. And then do you look at each leg separately?
You would have to, yeah.
That's a lot
of work.
And
actually, I was just pricing one out. I was going to Montana in a month or two, and I was just pricing out separate one ways, and it saved me money.
Wow.
So, but... Look into it. Anyway, and speaking of saving money, I don't know if you get my deals newsletter, but I just sent it out about an hour ago. There must have been some kind of mistake fare because they were offering under $200 round trip to Europe from the West Coast and East Coast. I'm sure that fare is gone now, but you can try it. I put it in my Twitter feed if you don't get my newsletter. But also that are deals that are still good, San Francisco to Shanghai, $525 round trip, including all taxes on United. Or if you want to stay domestic, D.C. to Burbank or vice versa for $253 round trip. And this is United's having a sale. Usually it's American.
And now you know why Johnny is a professional traveler, because it's pretty much taking every hour of his day just to get the tickets.
Well, I spent so much time this morning just booking tickets.
Wow. But now, why don't you use a travel agent? I guess this is part of your job, huh?
Well, I do on certain things. So especially if, I mean, I rarely ever buy a business class ticket, but if I am, I use a certain guy who can get me unbelievable deals, business class for international. But I also will price out, especially multi-city tickets through a travel agent.
Now, how does he get better deals than you do?
Some of them just know different tips and tricks. You know, they might, especially if you're flying internationally, sometimes they'll book a ticket. Let's say if you're going to Bangkok, they'll reroute it through Colombo, Sri Lanka, and they'll save a significant amount of money. So there's all kinds. And plus, I recommend using travel agents for, cruises again, or, if you're doing a big family gathering or a party or a honeymoon, something that you do not want to mess up. So look into that stuff. Wow. But I do have a new app for you.
Yes.
This one is called Grab, G-R-A-B.
Okay.
And about a year ago, I mentioned a similar one. It's called AirGrub, but they're only in 3 airports. And these guys, so if you're in a hurry and you want to order food and you don't want to wait in line, you can get on Grab. It's available free on iOS and Android. And right now they're in Atlanta, Austin, Fort Lauderdale, Denver, and New Orleans, but they're expanding. And you can order whatever you want, pay for it, and then you go to the pickup counter line, and you're on your way. So it's great if you have a tight connection, or you show up to the airport late and you don't like the airplane food, or your plane probably isn't even serving food if you're in coach.
Some of these places, man, the lines are so long.
They are.
Who has time? Now, what they really ought to do is bring it to you at your gate.
Well, that would be nice.
Then you got to get some Segways and get some Grab employees at these airports and just bring me my burger.
That would be real nice.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
And speaking of long lines, I just flew here 2 days ago from L.A., and the line for security is around the corner. If you do not have TSA PreCheck, you need to show up to the airport extra, extra early. We talked about it before, but, when I saw those lines, and this was on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Was it a Wednesday?
I got to get me some of that global traveler.
Global entry. You need global entry. If you go to Canada, you need Nexus, which includes TSA PreCheck and Global Entry. If you go to Mexico, get Sentry, and it includes the others. So, it's the way to go. Sadly, you have to pay for it to expedite your way through security, but it's worth the $85 they charge for 5 years. But again, get the Global Entry. It's $100 for 5 years. It includes it, and it's great for when you land internationally. You can just zip through, because those lines are ridiculous as well. And if you pay with a certain credit card, like an American Express Platinum card, reimburse you.
Yeah.
So
very nice. I should do that.
And that's all I got for you.
Well, that's all I need. You've given us many things to help us travel better. That's Johnny Jett. You'll find him at johnnyjett.com. He's on the Twitter at Johnny Jett. JohnnyJett. He's on the Instagram, same name. Are you Snapchatting?
I was doing Snapchat for a little while. It's just, it's really difficult because Snapchat, what I love about it is that it's real time.
Yeah.
But the problem is you can't enjoy the moment when you're in Snapchat.
No.
So at least with Instagram, you can, just quickly take a photo and then
Snapchat's
later in your hotel room.
A commitment.
It is a commitment.
You gotta care.
And all the millennials are on it.
Oh, yeah.
And I do snap my niece and my nephew mostly, but
I only snap when I've got a little time. Hey, thank you, Johnny. JohnnyJett.com. We'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's move on to Richard in Omaha. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I got a problem. I just moved from California, and I've got T-Mobile phone service.
Okay.
And the phone service back here in my apartment and in the city itself is really bad. And I'm wondering what would be a good service to get back here, if you would know.
Well, of course, I don't know. I'm not in Omaha, but the best way to find out, a couple of things you could do. What you shouldn't do is go to the carrier's website and look at their coverage map, because that's my experience often exaggerates their connectivity. Are you going to stay in Omaha for a while, or?
Yeah, I'm going to be here for probably a year and a half, 2 years.
So, you know, ask your coworkers, your neighbors, what they use and what they get great results with. That you're rising was such a great point, because you see the ads for Verizon, and with the one with the bowling balls, and oh, we're better than anybody else. It's not even close.
Yeah.
But the problem is, you don't live nationwide. you live in an area.
I live in one small area.
Right. And that area is different from another area, So a nationwide service doesn't really tell you much unless you're a truck driver. If you're a long-haul truck driver, then watch those ads. The rest of us, we need to find out what's best in our area. Now, you can always, you're getting bad results with T-Mobile. You can always go to another carrier and say, you know, if you think Verizon might be better. First, I'd ask neighbors and coworkers, what do you use? For instance, you'd like to know what works. Do you work in an office building? What works in that building? You know, so what are you guys using, right? Because it could be different. What works in your apartment or your house? Well, that could be different, too. Ask neighbors for that. If they seem to agree on one, then you usually have, if you go to a company, say, look, I'm new in town. I want to change service, but I want to make sure you work. They'll usually give you 30 days return policy on a phone. They'll say, okay, fine, we're going to set you up. And if you go back to them a week later and say, you know, you don't work in my house and you don't work in my office, they'll say, oh, sorry, thanks. And take it back.
Okay.
So that's a, you know, something you should do. But I do a little footwork. There are websites. DSL Reports, one of my favorites. They report on ISP capabilities, but you can also get information about 4G there. In fact, that's the speed test that I use. I just used it a minute ago, actually, to check my VPN speeds. And as a result, people using speedtest.dslreports.com, they have a lot of information about connectivity all over. So that's very useful. When you do the speed test, they'll say, are you on 4G, 3G, cable, DSL? What are you using? And so they can collect information. And then they also ask people to post on their forums what kind of service are you getting in this area.
Oh, okay.
So that's a nice place. The one that does the tests for Verizon and AT&T is a company called Root Metrics. And you can go to rootmetrics.com. The fact that they get paid by the carriers makes me a little less likely to trust them, but it's just more data. Okay, so rootmetrics.com, dslreports.com, but the best, of course, is going to be your neighbors and your coworkers.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, that's a, you know, that's a question that really does vary everywhere. You know, Verizon, which was originally 9X, the New York cell phone company, is great in New York City. Not necessarily great in Omaha, though. I don't know who's great in Omaha. AT&T, probably. One of the nice things about T-Mobile, and other companies are starting to do this, I'm a T-Mobile fan because we have great service here in Northern California, and it's kind of the number four company, so not a lot of people use it. I'm a little disappointed T-Mobile's been growing so fast, because that means my service is going to go downhill. They're getting successful. Darn it. But one of the things they do, which is nice, on depending on the phone, but they do it on an iPhone, they do it on my Galaxy S7, is Wi-Fi calling. So if you have a strong Wi-Fi signal at home and at work, it'll use that instead of the cell network for data and for phone. And that actually is a great solution. Wi-Fi calling helps a lot. Fern. Hello, Fern, in Junction City, Kansas.
Hello, Leo.
Your YouTube is acting up.
Yes. I get the sound all right, but instead of a picture, it's just a bunch of real pretty colored lines on it.
That's not good.
No.
Can you see video on other sites?
Yes. If it's something that someone sends me in an email.
Yeah. What you could try, there are other, there's like Vimeo, Vimeo.com. You can go there and see if the video plays back there normally. Couple of possibilities. YouTube has two ways to play video back. One is with Flash, and they're moving away from that. Everybody's moving away from that. So one thing you can do is to see, what browser do you use? Is it an Internet Explorer?
I'm really not sure.
Are you using Windows?
I'm not sure. I'm on a Verizon tablet.
Oh, interesting. A Verizon tablet.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I should have asked you that up front. So it's probably an Android tablet then.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, there's no flash on Android. And in fact, some of the fixes I was going to tell you wouldn't make any sense on a tablet.
Okay.
I would try going to do this in your browser. YouTube.com/HTML5.
Five,
the number five. YouTube.com/HTML5. Make sure that YouTube's not trying to send you flash video content. They shouldn't be. But what you want is the HTML5 player. And sometimes your browser won't do it by default. So check the boxes on that screen and make sure the HTML5 player is used.
Okay.
That could be one problem because there is no flash on an Android tablet anymore. Do you have the YouTube app? Or are you doing it? So is there, when you start it, do you start the red icon with the triangle in it, or do you do it from your browser? You don't know, probably.
I don't know. It's
yeah, you're just clicking a link that comes to you in email something.
Right,
yeah.
Correct.
So that's the browser.
Okay.
I would get the app. So go to the Google Play App Store and download the YouTube app. Do you know how to get apps on your tablet?
Not really.
Okay. So there's an icon on your tablet, on the desktop, that's the Google Play Store.
Yes, I know where that is.
Yeah, hit that. Search for YouTube in there, and you'll be able to download. It'll have a YouTube. You'll know it's YouTube because it'll have a red icon with a white triangle in it. And there's a button next to it that says install. Press the install button.
Okay.
And then run that. Once you install it, you'll see the icon on your desktop. Run that and see if you can watch videos there. I bet you can.
Okay.
And I think that's probably the first step to make sure that everything's okay. If you still can't, then take it back to Verizon and say, you gave me a bum tablet. It's not working. Because it should. It should. All right. I hope that all helps. YouTube.com/HTML5. That's in the browser where it says Internet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Unity, unity, unity. YOUNITY.com. It's not often we have an advertisement for a product that's 100% free. This one is 100% free. But it's so cool, you're going to want to know more about it. It's getunity.com. GETYOUNITY.com/tech guy. You know what? I shouldn't even have to tell you what it does because it's free. Oh, all right. I'll tell you what it does. It lets you take your media everywhere. Imagine at home, on your computer, you probably have movies and music and pictures and all sorts of stuff. Wouldn't it be nice if you could stream your movie collection to your tablet or phone while you're traveling? Share the media on your hard drive with your friends peer-to-peer. Your friends even can stream it directly from your computer. And you know what? You can install Unity on every computer you want to access. And Unity's smart enough that it will dedupe. It'll unify all your media into one organized menu on the Unity app. That is awesome. That is awesome. Works on iOS and Android. Works on all computers. And it's free. You could stream and share GoPro videos, stream and share Lightroom or Apple Photos, libraries of photo albums. Use AirPlay if you want to stream music or video to your TV. So you stream it from your desktop to your phone and AirPlay it to your TV. It all works. It's amazing. Unity, free, easy to install, personal media server. I almost hate using that phrase because that makes it sound complicated. It's not. You just install Unity on your system. It automatically goes out, finds all the content, and shares it. Makes it as easy as possible. Completely secure. Really fantastic and free. So install it on your Mac or PC right now. Once you're done with that, download the app on your iOS or Android device and hit the road. Take advantage of the fact that it's free right now. Get Unity, GETYOUNITY.com/tech guy. And we thank Unity for their support and for a great product. We use it all the time. John uses it. to stream as he's watching his, you know, he's watching a movie in the lunchroom. I say, how are you doing that? Where are you getting that from? Oh, it's on my. He's into Mulholland Drive. Do you have Mulholland Drive on your Unity server? He's explaining the movie to me. Weirdest movie ever. They all went to see it the other night. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk tech. That means computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones, smartwatches, all that stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And we're going to just keep going with the phones. We've got lots of calls. Thanks to Heather Hammond, our phone ranger. Brad in Los Angeles is next. Hi, Brad.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for taking the call. I'm not computer savvy at all, so all this stuff is new to me. I am posting some videos on YouTube now, some videos we really want to kind of go viral and get the word out for a new show we're producing. And I want to know the difference between embedding and sharing, because I have a YouTube page where we've cleaned the video, but then I was told to either embed it or share it to my web.
Yeah, there's two different ways you can share a YouTube video. You can send somebody a link. Remember our last caller? She's get links in the email. She clicks the link, the browser opens, she plays it back, and it gets lines.
Sure.
That's sharing. Embedding gives you a code that you could put in a web page that, and you've seen this before, the YouTube videos in your page. They don't have to leave your page to watch the video. You just press the play button.
That's what I did. I just wanted to make sure that I didn't mess it up, because it was one of those things where we were kind of deciding, do we send people directly to YouTube, because we want all the clicks to count on YouTube. I don't have a count.
It counts either way. It doesn't matter. A play is a play is a play.
And does the title make a difference?
It doesn't make a difference in terms of embedding. It makes a huge difference in SEO. And since you want to go viral,
yeah,
your best title would be something like Topless Rihanna Sings Songs by the Late Great David Bowie. I think you'd get some hits.
That's and I wouldn't be misleading anyone with
and
that.
And it wouldn't be misleading because, I don't know, you'd have to figure that out.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, too. I had, our current title is, it's a series called Zombie Fallout, but it's Zombie Fallout Music Video Teaser, because it's a
terrible title. Terrible title. Terrible. It's too real, man. Okay, so now here's how viral, by the way, nobody knows how to get stuff viral, but I think we're getting a better idea of it, okay? Sure. Zombies good. But you can't, you know, what the rest of that stuff, what was that? I don't care about that. You got to find something.
Will I lose my current views if I change the title
no.
of the video?
The views are the views, yeah. So, and what you're looking for is the terms people are searching YouTube or Google for.
Okay.
You want to get those words in the title. So, tell me what this is.
It's Zombie Fallout. It's a new series by a horror author, Mark Tufo. So we're okay.
Does he have a following?
He has a huge following. He's got a.
Why don't you use his name then? You think people will be searching for him? Make sure his name's front and center. Zombies is good. Zombie Fallout's good. I would put his name first. Mark, what's it called? Mark Fallout. Tufo. Yeah, Zombie yeah. Fallout.
So if you look at the current video, it's Zombie Fallout Music Video Teaser, which you said you hated. But if you said I can now, how do I go into my YouTube and change the title without losing those?
You won't lose anything. You just edit it. The video, the hits accrue to the video regardless of the name.
Okay.
So don't put a new video up. Don't change the title in the video. That doesn't even matter.
It won't.
The video title in the video could be X136A23, because nobody sure. sees that. They see the text title you give it on the YouTube page. That's what matters.
Okay.
All right. So
one of the funny things that we did was Whip Me Nay Nay. It's got 600 million hits.
Yeah,
you can do on
right.
YouTube.
Okay. Yeah, right.
What we did was we wrote a heavy metal version of Whip Me Nay Nay.
Good. Heavy metal Whip Me Nay Nay. Big hit.
Heavy metal Whip Me Nay Nay.
Big hit, because people are searching for Nay Nay because they want to learn the dance. Now, there's a fine line between misleading.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, in fact, go ahead and try to find any viral video of the last 10 years on YouTube, and search for, you know, search for, I don't know, Star Wars, you know, guy or chocolate. Search for Chocolate Rain. The last thing you're going to find is the original Chocolate Rain video, because everybody and their brother has a variant of it, and those are all going to show up before the original. It's very hard now to find original, you know, viral memes, because because, you know, Whip Me Nene was original. If you do zombie heavy metal Whip Me Nene, man, that's boy, that's SEO gold. SEO gold.
Yeah, I just, we posted it yesterday, and we've got 10,000 views.
Well,
and
you're
my
doing
big
great.
Worry was,
no, that's great.
Yeah, well, as far as his Facebook and his social media, I expected more because of all the different avenues he's got. So that's what I was worried about, is that maybe the word that was my initial question was, should I have shared it instead of embedded it? Because I didn't know.
Doesn't matter. You want to. You actually. There is no magic to viral. I mean, there's certainly techniques, but for instance, you can't. You don't want to embed the. You can't embed the video on Twitter. You're going to share the link. Actually, you could on Twitter now. It's changing. I would make. Here's something I would do. I would make a native video for Facebook. So, in the past, people put YouTube videos on Facebook. Facebook doesn't like that as much as having a native video. So upload it to Facebook, too, and have it be native video. You know why? Because it auto-plays the minute somebody scrolls over it. And here's another tip for you for Facebook. The video plays, but the audio doesn't. So you'll notice the really smart Facebook sharers put it up natively on Facebook, and then they use subtitles or text. Usually it's fun graphical text to indicate the content, so the people who are scrolling by stop and ideally turn the audio on and watch. But you'll get a hit from Facebook anyway, because they count the first half second practically. I mean, the minute somebody sees...
That's another question, because I was reading that.
They count it right away.
Watch the whole video.
No, they don't care. And YouTube doesn't care either.
Really?
Don't worry about the numbers, because that doesn't really ultimately tell you that much. What you want is you want to get the actual... attention. You're looking to get attention.
Exactly.
Because you want people then to watch the full thing, right?
Yeah, we want them to watch the full thing, and we want them to know the series. It's about the kind of building the hype of the series.
So what's the video? Tell me the zombie.
The one you hate. The current one is Zombie Fallout Music Video Teaser. It's we have a YouTube page called Zombie Fallout the TV
I think
series.
Zombie Fallout's fine, because it's the generic stuff.
But I think that's what falls into place. Every time my wife would Google it, Zombie Fallout would come up as an anime video game.
Oh, so there's another mistake. Another mistake, but you can't change that. You're stuck with that.
No, this is, I mean, we're a series that I think even came up before this anime. This is like a Japanese video game, completely different. But
that always is an issue. You know,
playing.
My podcast network's called Twit, but people think that I stole it from Twitter. It's the other way around, but too late trying to convince anybody else.
Oh, it is the other way. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you see? The podcast network predates Twitter by several years, but that doesn't. And Ev Williams, before he did Twitter, you know what he did? He did a podcast channel called Odeo, and in which we were the number one podcast. So I have to think there was a little bit of in the back, at least, of his mind. I asked him once. He said, "Yeah, we didn't think either one of us would become big, so we didn't think it'd be a problem." Unfortunately, Twitter did. And now everybody, including you, think I copied them.
No, I didn't think you copied them, but I didn't.
Yeah, it's an interesting coinciding. Right. But see, watch this, because people are going to think you copied Zombie Fallout instead of vice versa.
Sure, yeah.
Anyway, so you did the best thing, which was, and by the way, I like, there's the word giveaway. You know, remember, you're going to be doing what people are going to search for free. It's kind of all sleazy, though. So I like the integrity of Zombie Fallout Music Video Teaser. It says what it is. There's some integrity there. So don't listen to me. You'll get more hits now that you mentioned it on a national radio program. 8888 Ask Leo. That's another trick, by the way. Which I think you might know, Brad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nice makeup. This is no low-budget zombie video music trailer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, that's our phone number if you want to talk high tech with me. And David does. He's in Los Angeles. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Listening to the great KFI, our mothership. I'm great. What can I do for you?
Well, I am desperate to ask you about two things that Apple can't seem to help me with.
Oh,
dear. I have a Mac desktop that after about 10 hours goes from sleep mode to shut off mode. But when I turn it on or I hit the computer in the morning, I have to go to the first screen, put in a password, which doesn't do anything. It then cancels and sends me to the turn on where I have to put my name in and then my password.
Right, I've had this happen on a Mac laptop, actually.
Have you?
Yeah, okay, it's very frustrating.
The store couldn't help me, and I just have to keep playing with it till it turns on in the morning.
Yeah.
It happens about 10 hours after it's been in sleep mode, but I can't find anywhere.
So I have a laptop that I use on the shows. And this is exactly the same thing. As long as I use it every day, it was no problem. But then I have a 2-day period of 2 days off. I'd come in after my weekend, and I'd try to start it up, and I'd have to basically force shut it down. I'd have to turn hold the on off button until it went dark, and then start it up again. And right. what I started doing was just at the end of the weekend, at the beginning of the weekend, just log out, shut down the thing, and then one day it stopped. So,
really?
Yeah. Okay. So I do think that you are on to something, that there is some issue. But as a sufferer, as a fellow sufferer, I never was able to find out. I presume you've looked in the energy saver system preference pane. And
I've been through everything, security, saving.
Yeah. And this was a laptop. Yours is it an iMac? You say desktop.
Desktop,
And you keep it up to date, right?
Yeah, and it always happens. I can use it at night, say 11 o'clock when I'm up at 6 or 7 in the morning. Then all of a sudden, I've got to cancel out my login screen.
Yeah.
Then I wind up on this other screen. Yeah. And the bad thing is, I think I may have done it.
No, I've done it. It's exactly the symptom I had.
Oh, okay.
So a couple of things I would try in the energy saver. Don't put the hard disk to sleep when possible. Uncheck that box.
Okay.
And you might want to disable power nap. Now, I know power nap's nice because what it means is it can go out and get email while it's asleep.
Right.
But I play with that anyway. I mean, see if it does anything. You could turn off computer sleep entirely, but then you're going to be using power even when you're not using the computer.
Gotcha. All right, let me ask you my more serious one so I don't take your time.
Okay.
On my iPhone, I have all of a sudden developed something, and they've changed my phone. They've gone through it. Verizon did a search a 3-day search of my account.
Yeah.
For some reason, I get a box that pops up when I'm anywhere on Safari that says no cellular activation. It just keeps popping up. But then if I cancel it, it'll go into search mode and it'll find something. But all it does is constantly pop up. And they're telling me I have not malware, but something.
No, you don't have malware. It's not something bad. Make sure I'm sure they check this, but do make sure that the profile is correct. There are profiles for your access to the LTE network. And you can get, I think maybe they're hinting at this. You can get spurious profiles in there.
Really?
Have you tried wiping the phone? I know I hate to do this. It's a real pain.
We actually have done that. The only thing they're telling me now is I have to set it up as a new phone, if that's what you mean.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. What I'm worried about
what you can do is back it up to iTunes, set it up as a new phone, see if this problem comes back. If it does not, give it a day without installing new stuff or restoring from iTunes. If it fixes it and then you restore from iTunes and it comes back, then it probably is a kind of a bad profile.
Okay, now here's what they did. They gave me a new phone. They reinstalled everything. And they're telling me now I have to, because not reinstall everything I already
own. Right. They're afraid you're going to write that new thing in there, that old thing
in there. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I can do that. My problem one is that I will lose all my techs, all my business techs.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah, unless I find somewhere to somehow store those.
Yeah, there's a program you can use.
Okay.
That will allow you to put it on your computer.
Okay.
So I would get this before you do this. And this, you know, you should do this probably. It's called PhoneView. It's from a company called Ecamm, E-C-A-M-M. What it allows you to do, you can try it for free, but it's $30 to buy. It's worth it. It allows you to get all the data, your text messages, your iMessages, your WhatsApp messages, your voicemails, your call history, all your media off of the phone onto your desktop.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Worth the $30.
But then do I reinstall that or am I just saving?
Well, the data is not the problem. The problem is an app, either an app that's installing a profile or some stray profile that got on there some other way. So they don't know what they're saying is, well, let's not reinstall. What I would suggest doing is back up your data, install the apps one by one from the App Store. Don't do a backup restore, manual restore. It's easy to do. If you go to the App Store on your iPhone, you can go to Purchases, and then you can go to Purchases Not on This Phone. And that includes every app you've downloaded, whether you bought it or not, that isn't currently on the phone, and you could easily one by one. I wouldn't do them all at once.
Reinstall
a bit at a time. See if everything works for a day, and then if it does, then install more. In worst case scenario, you figure out what's doing it.
Yeah, which one's causing that?
Yeah, okay. Something's causing it. Something installed a new profile. For instance, when I install my camera connection software, I have a Leica camera and the Leica software. It uses Wi-Fi to copy the photos over. First thing it does is installs a new profile. And that kind of thing could be part of the problem.
The profile. Okay, I will do that. Thank you so much.
I hope it helps. And, yeah, sleep is a problem in general. The chat room's all going on about how when a computer sleeps, it's always unknown what's going to happen. Because when they wake up, they're groggy. You know how you feel. You go to bed, maybe you took a, you know, Tylenol PM and you wake up, you're rubbing your eyes, you don't know where you are, what you're doing. Your whole day is kind of weird. That's what happened to the computer. It got groggy after 10 hours, and now it's not acting right. And you wouldn't think this would be a problem. It is. In fact, it's more of a problem now than it used to be because Intel puts support in for this kind of sleep in its processors, and they do it differently, and the firmware is different, and it's weird, and it takes a while for the companies to figure it out. Microsoft called this a hard computer science problem. And by the way, on their Surface Book, which has been out for almost a year, they still haven't fixed it. They say they will any day now. Yeah, sleep is tough for computers. I don't know why. 8888 Ask Leo. Don't go to sleep yet. The best is yet to come. The last half hour of the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, right after this. This portion of the Tech Guy Show, brought to you by me, the Tech Guy, 8888-ASK-LEO, and our fun sponsors. I always want to thank our sponsors because, we pick them. We hand-pick them. They're hand-selected for your enjoyment. It's true. I'm a weirdo, and I don't think the sales division likes me so much, but I will say no all the time. I say no. I only put on sponsors I really, really use and like. Just kind of my thing. And that way, you know, if I tell you something, you can trust that it's actually something I use and like. And because of our fine sponsors, we don't have to charge you for the show, but we also don't have to, you know, squeeze money out of you for access to the website, techguylabs.com. It's free. There's no sign up. I don't even have a newsletter. I don't need one. I got a radio show. TechGuyLabs.com. Keep an eye on that website. That's a place where all the information we share on the show goes there. But then more information throughout the week as people go there and they add comments and suggestions. So if you asked a question on the show and you didn't get every bit of the answer that you wanted, continue to check the site because there's always more stuff there. TechGuyLabs.com. I was talking earlier about our ultimate virtual reality gaming machine, the thing we built for the Oculus Rift. By the way, that is cool, the Oculus Rift. I was playing the simplest game,
It's called Lucky's Tale. You're a little fox, and it's what you would call in a normal gaming situation a platformer, because it's kind of flat and you're jumping around. Except when you do it in a 3D virtual reality environment, you're in the world. You're looking around, and this simple simple kids game, which I mocked when they said this is going to be one of our launch titles. I confess I did mock it. It's actually incredibly engrossing. You're kind of in that world. You kind of become the fox. I think this is just the beginning. Anyway, the machine we built, we had to build a much more powerful machine. All the specs for that are on the website, techguylabs.com, as well. Let's see. Next caller is Jose in Santa Fe Springs, California. Hello, Jose.
Hey, Leo. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Welcome. I'm in the market for my first flat-screen TV.
Oh, you're in luck. This is a great time to buy. Couldn't be a better time to buy.
Well, that's great to hear. I'm looking at a Samsung 60-inch.
Okay.
I have a budget of like $1,000.
And you can get a 60-inch for $1,000?
Well, I was at a big box store just last night.
Yeah.
And they have a Samsung 60-inch 1080p smart TV.
Sounds great.
And it's on sale for $750 from $960.
That's a great price.
Is it?
Yeah, I have my TV's a Samsung as well. I would suggest you also look at the Vizio TVs.
Okay.
Sometimes you get more bang for your buck. Vizio's software is, in my opinion, better than Samsung's. The smart TV stuff. All that means is you can connect it to the internet and watch Netflix and other stuff. That's what it means. Samsung doesn't do it, in my opinion, very well, but Vizio does a better job of it. And if you can look at the Vizio P series, if you can afford one of them, those are really nice TVs.
Awesome.
So, but I would compare them to the Vizios. The problem is, of course, in a big box store or any showroom for that matter, it's hard to judge.
Sure.
Because the TVs are put on, they're put in a setting called showroom that makes them super bright.
They make them look very pretty, don't they?
Yeah, and then there's the fluorescent lights and the noise, so it's really hard to judge. But try to, you know, as best you can. Here's what you're looking for. You're looking for blacks that are truly black.
Okay.
Not grayish black. And whites that are truly white. And one then would presume that all the colors in between are pretty good too. But, you know,
sure.
Unless you bring a special unit to test them, it's going to be hard to test them. But you want them to, and again, they're in a dynamic mode that you won't see true colors. But you do want to see how white the whites are, how black the blacks are.
Is there any particular thing I should be looking for in a smart TV? Like the 1080p, I'm like, not too up on this. Is that sufficient?
Almost. You know? Most of the content you're getting on cable TV, all of the content, is not even 1080p. It's 1080i or 720p. Blu-ray players are 1080p. There is a new 4K standard or Ultra HD standard, but there's no content, and you'd have to, you know, there's very little content. You'd have to buy a special player, or you could stream it, but the problem with streaming it is in order to stream it, it'd be highly compressed, and so you're not going to get the benefit. I think 1080p is fine.
Awesome. Thank you, Leo, for all your help.
You're welcome. Enjoy your new TV. You know, no matter what, you're going to like it. The only thing I always caution people, when you get your first HD TV and you're watching old TV shows, suddenly they look really bad. And, you know, it's just because you're seeing them for real instead of on a smeary old set. So if all of a sudden the SD content doesn't look so good, that's just because it's being blown up to a bigger size and you're seeing every pixel, and it isn't good. It's not, actually. You're seeing it as it is. So try, if you get a 1080p HD TV, try to get as many HD signals in there as you can. You may be a little disappointed by lower quality signals. Let's see. Jose, that was Jose. Bob in Apple Valley, California. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say.
It was morning, I'm sure, when you called.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, and thanks for your patience.
Yeah, well, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
What happened is about 3 weeks ago, I got a notice from Verizon that I had to switch to AOL mail service.
Yes.
I have been using Yahoo.
I've heard a lot of pain from people who've gone through this.
Well, they are correct. It is painful.
They've launched it in three states to start. It's going to be everywhere because, remember, Verizon bought AOL. So they started in California, Texas, and Delaware. I can't remember. Three states. So you're at the front edge of the pain. Congratulations.
Yeah, what happens when they migrated my email from Yahoo to AOL, they didn't migrate the file folders that I had.
Yeah. Last week, somebody called and said they didn't migrate all her contacts.
Do what?
Somebody called last week and said they didn't migrate all her contacts either.
Yeah, that's not surprising. my problem is every time I try to get on my Yahoo page, it says my password does not coincide with my email address.
Aye.
And then when I put in forgot password, I click on forgot password, it sends me over to a Verizon page.
Yeah. And now, see, I was told by some that you could still log into your old Yahoo Mail, but apparently not.
But I don't know how to do that.
Because, you know what's really funny? Verizon is about to buy Yahoo.
Yeah.
So now what I think is that now I'm thinking, the reason they only did this in three states is they're hedging their bets in case they do get Yahoo. They're bidding for it. We'll find out April 18th. If they do, they're going to move you back to Yahoo.
Part that they're trying to buy Yahoo.
Uh-huh. Yeah, isn't that funny?
But in the meantime, I can't get those pages up that I want, that I put in those file folders. And it's very frustrating. It's a catch-22.
Yeah, the real trick would be if we could get into that old Yahoo account.
Is there a phone number for that I could call Yahoo? Because and Verizon used to be a pretty good tech support.
Yeah, no,
I got their last tech support.
No, I don't know. You know what? I don't think so. Right. I know.
Yeah, so I'm getting really frustrated.
I know.
I'm paying.
Are you logging in as a POP3? Are you using Outlook to do this, or how are you getting into your mail?
Well, I'm using. I have Windows 10, so I have.
The Windows 10.
Windows Edge.
Try using
Chrome.
All right, so keep listening. We're going to take a break, and the chat room is giving me some suggestions. I'm going to try to consolidate these and give you some advice when we get back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So they're saying, Guy Smiley says, and the guy's pretty smart, he says, go to account.yahoo.com instead of mail.yahoo.com.
I've been going to, account.
Account.
Yahoo.com.
Account, not mail.
Oh, okay.
See if that works. And then you're using your Verizon email address, am I correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, that's the only one you've got. That's what you're going to have to use.
Yes. Accounts, okay.
Try account, singular.
Singular.
I take you back to 1972 and a houseboat on the East River. From the
Hudson.
Outside, I'm sorry, on the Hudson River. From the outside, the lights are flashing. The disco ball is spinning. And inside, my God, it's Dick DiBartolo fruging the night away. To the middle.
That is correct, sir.
Burn, baby, burn. Disco Inferno. It's Dickie D, Mad Magazine's maddest writer in the Gizwiz, joins us every week with gadgets. I saw your post on Facebook of you on the Tonight Show, your moment in the sun.
Unbelievable, wasn't it?
So I guess Johnny was taking the night off.
Johnny had a week off, and they were doing, during the summer, they would do 1 week hosting with various people. And Gene Rayburn, of course, was very hot because of Match Game.
Gene is great. I would have watched the Gene Rayburn Tonight Show.
Yeah, he was very good. And he called me up and he said, come on down the studio. Let's do something silly. So
he introduced you as a safety expert.
Exactly.
Who was going to give a little talk on on safety, on protecting yourself safely.
Yes, yes. And I came out and hit the edge of the step that you step up to the thing and went flying. And I had taken a ream of paper with me. So as I fell,
I threw it in the air. Yes. By the way, that was a heck of a pratfall. That was worthy of Buster Keaton or, Soupy Sales. I mean, had you practiced that before? I didn't know you were a physical comic.
No, there wasn't any way to practice. And someone emailed me and said, it looked like Ed McMahon didn't know about it. I think we told Ed, but it wasn't until I saw the video that it did look pretty good.
It was great. Are you kidding?
I went sprawling. And
somehow got completely turned around.
I know. That was the funny thing. I said, how did this happen? I'm falling forward, and now I'm upside down facing the other direction.
The only negative is you got zero lines, and you really didn't see your face.
No, that's true.
So as good as it was and as proud as I was of seeing you on The Tonight Show, I'm afraid it didn't really – it wasn't really, your well, it was your finest hour. More like your finest 20 seconds.
Yeah, my finest, well, actually, it's my finest 48 seconds. Let's not underestimate what sort of thing it is.
You're right. Ed does look a little surprised. It's on your Facebook page. People should, you don't have to friend you, right? They can just follow you on Facebook.
I think they can.
Yeah.
I think they can.
And they drag you off.
And I tweeted it, too.
So, what do you got for us, Mr. Gizli?
Well, you know what? I have a clever gadget, and maybe, do you know about Hypersound Audio from Turtle Beach?
Oh, well, I know about Turtle Beach. They make sound cards, which nobody uses anymore.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, they make something called Hypersound Clear Audio Systems for people who have hearing problems.
Oh, and, well, that's me.
Oh, okay. Well, this is kind of neat. It's an expensive solution, but it works very well. They were at an event, and the guy's standing there, and I said, can I have a demo of this? And he said, okay, see that TV over there? That TV is on and playing very loudly, but you can't hear it, right? I said, I don't hear a thing. He said, sit down in the middle of the couch, and when you do, you are suddenly hearing the audio very clearly.
Highly directional sound.
It is totally directional, Leo. As a matter of fact,
Heather's all excited about this. Why are you so excited about this, Heather?
Our last caller is asking about this precise issue.
Oh, because he needs to turn the TV up really loud.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, it's a very expensive solution. It's like $1,670.
Okay.
But it is. And what's neat, Leo, is that everybody else in the house hears their own normal volume. So if one person is in the house and hard of hearing and they turn the volume way up, everybody else
sit in a very specific spot.
Yes, you aim. It's stereo speakers, and you aim them where you want the sweet spot to be. And that person will hear.
They're using this for advertising, too, because you can walk down a corridor and suddenly hear a billboard. And then
that is correct.
While you're standing in front of it, right?
Exactly. Best Buy is demonstrating video games. And as you walk by the kiosk, suddenly you hear the video game playing. If you keep on walking, it's gone again. So when you walk on back to see what you heard, you will now be standing at the sweet spot of the kiosk.
Now, how's the sound quality? I mean, is there bass?
Leo, I was at a Pepcom event, so it was very loud in there. But the amazing part to me was that how could I not hear any audio? The guy said, stand up. I stood up. The sound was gone.
Wow.
Sat down. The sound was back. And I'm thinking, I couldn't judge the quality, but I'm thinking this is an amazing technology that it does focus it exactly where you want it to be.
Yeah, I mean, this happens in many households. It happens in mine where I need it louder. If I don't have my hearing aids in, I'll turn it up too loud, and my wife will go, what are you doing? Turn it down!
And you said, what did you say?
I say, hey, speaking to the trumpet. Wow, okay, it is a little pricey.
It is pricey. It's Hypersound.
We still don't know if it's high fidelity. I guess it doesn't matter. At least you can hear.
You can hear. But at that price, I'm assuming it is. Maybe wrongly. But it's hypersound.com, so you could check it out there.
Yeah. Well, you can't check it out. But they do have demo areas, places you can go, with stores and stuff. And
Exactly. Like you really have to go to a special place so you can hear it.
Hey, what a good idea. Hypersound from Turtle Beach, hypersoundhearing.com. You know, I'm glad they found a follow-up because they made sound cards for PCs. And that's that market has disappeared pretty much, right?
Yes. Yeah. So they figured, let's do something else.
Yeah. Dick has a great website where you can find details on all this and more. Gizwiz.biz. GIZWIZ.BIZ. You can also play the What the Heck Is It contest, which is a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Just identify a close-up picture of a gadget or a gizmo. 12 autographed Mad Magazines for the right answer. And if there are more than 12 right answers, he'll do a drawing. And 24 for the cleverest wrong answers. And that he judges. And he judges harshly. So be clever.
Yes, exactly.
You know what? That's challenging, right? If you have a friend. I have a friend who's a very famous comedian.
Okay.
And every time he emails me, it's laugh out loud funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what I should probably just do is answer straight and not try to be funny. But you know, you're another friend who's a famous comic. You're one of the funniest writers I know, and you're published in Mad Magazine every year for decades. I don't try to be funny with you anymore because I can't win.
Oh, well, you can. You can. Oh, well, the thing is, if you write me and just say sincerely, I laugh because I think that's so unlike Leo.
You know, Harry, who's the guy in Night Court? Harry Anderson, I think, right?
Yes.
The great actor, had a rubber stamp that said sincerely. And I thought that's a nice joke. That's a subtle joke.
That is great. That is great.
Sincerely. Well,
I used to have a thank you letter that I signed, but on the bottom it said, form number 7912, official D. Bartolo thank you form letter.
So what's your advice? If I'm writing to this guy, famous comedian, don't try to be funny, right?
I always try to
make a joke, and I'm sure it's just like he's probably grumpy.
I would be funny. You know, just read it over, and if it's something that you think, oh, this doesn't work at all.
I thought it was pretty funny.
I would send it. I would send it.
He wrote last email I got from him, he said, I have a lot of tech questions, but I would send them to you, but can you just answer them anyway? And so my answer was, yeah, I've attached them, and I didn't attach anything. I've attached my answers.
Oh, okay.
That's funny.
That's good. I think that's good. That mine back would have been, number one, use RCA cables. Number two, erase the hard disk.
See,
number
this is
three,
why
rebooted.
I got to hire you to be my writer. That's the solution.
There you go.
Gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Talk to you next week. Hey, thanks to Nathan Staten, our musical director. Did a great job spinning the hits. Heather Hammond, our phone ranger, answering the phones. Thanks to you, most of all, for joining us. Couldn't do the show without you. I'll see you next time. Have a great Geek Week. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.